Hello Thorsten, hello Padma, hello Gaia, and hello Gopal. First, thanks that you are willing to give an interview about trauma and trauma healing. And first a question to each of you, what means trauma to you, what you have experienced maybe with your own trauma or with people who has come to you who needs help in healing a trauma. Maybe each of you can give a short comment or sharing about that.
So, sometimes we tend to say, someone has a trauma or this is a traumatic experience. If we look closer, that's our experience, that we have to differentiate between the experience itself, which may be some kind of event in the outside, which really tends to hurt, to threaten someone. But it's not only the event, because an event can be processed in different ways. It can be processed just in a natural way where some surviving mechanisms happen, so that there is a reaction, kind of anger, to fight against the threat, or a kind of fear to run away, or, and that's a third surviving mechanism, is to freeze. So the free F, and then there's also a fourth F. And I don't know where this, it's a psychological view at first, and we can speak about the spiritual aspects maybe also. But somehow, especially if this reaction is like, it goes into freezing, that someone, it's a surviving mechanism, which helps, for example, just if a cat gets, if a mouse runs and a cat comes, the mouse cannot fight, it's too weak to fight against the cat. It can run away and it does it. But sometimes, just imagine if the mouse gets into a kind of situation where it cannot fight anymore, it can really shrink down its whole body functions to be quiet and freeze, so that maybe the cat doesn't see it or it thinks it's dead, and then I don't want to eat it because a living mouse is much tastier. So at first, this freezing mechanism is something very, very good, something very natural in a way. But if it tends to stay, if the mouse cannot, and normally also if the threat is away and the mouse runs again, and there sometimes happens something like a movement and energy, and it maybe has some kind of revitalization, and then it's okay, then it's not natural. So. But somehow if this process comes not really to an end or gets stuck on a way, then this freezing aspect can somehow stay, or in the human psyche, I would say, not in the whole human personality, but at some parts can be traumatized. And they are processed traumatized. And then it's a question, what is helpful to get these freezed parts of ourself again healed or feel life again. Maybe this, at first, I don't know what, maybe there are other perspectives, but that's maybe one way of seeing it. And yeah, or we can maybe talk about what can be a healing or healing factors or something also, but I don't want to speak all the time here. And maybe there are additional perspectives, yeah.
And you also wanted to hear about a personal and professional experience with trauma.
Yes.
Right? So I would say that for me, there's certainly been a process. Having studied psychology, at first I understood that, as Thorsten just explained, yes, okay, there is this extreme event, which just for the definition of something being a traumatic experience, it's a really shocking experience that would be overwhelming or threatening for almost anybody. And there's this process that then leads to a traumatic experience or a traumatic processing of this experience. And so just from a personal but also professional in the sense of from my studies in psychology, that's what I understood, which I would say from my current perspective, and that may have been just the status of the research at the time or just the little studies that I did, that really that was only about one aspect mainly. I got to learn about shock trauma only. Plus, then from the other side of satsang, which we've both studied psychology, but then really our main focus is on satsang, which is a tradition of just pure silence. And we often, from our teachers, from our direct teachers, Ilan Gangaji and also Papaji, and then their teacher, Ramana, we got to learn about this immense potential of just really stopping, just being silent and just everything stopping. And in that, there's the possibility of discovering what's completely whole. And in that sense, even more than healed, because there, nothing can touch or hurt this in a way. So, from that background, of course, there can be a kind of a tendency to then believe that, okay, everything can just be stopped immediately, and you can just always stop and be silent, and in that, everything is already whole and healed. And while that certainly is true, there may very well also be aspects or moments in people, be it people who come to satsang or to the lila therapy or the hypnotherapy in this field that we also offer, where sometimes that's not possible so easily because traumatic experiences don't so easily allow somebody to just stop, or it seems just too overwhelming. And so then also in both arenas, learning from the people who came and who I learned this from, as well as also in my own experience, just actually during a few years maybe, or just a few years ago, I guess, I started learning more about also earlier, or what's the, you probably know the words better, huh? Bonding, is it bonding trauma? Or
attachment trauma. Mm-hmm.
Attachment trauma, that's the word. Okay. Yeah, attachment trauma and developmental trauma, right? I guess I heard from you about that also.
Possibly.
I really appreciate that you brought that into the satsang scene also. Yeah, I think it's very important because that really does make a huge difference. That it's not only shock trauma, but that really there are different, but you can certainly explain much more about that better. I don't need to stutter around here, you know the words for that. So anyway, for me, I can say, if you ask about my personal and professional background, I would say that that makes a huge difference to really know about that also. Because I really would say that I did believe, well, okay, if it's like there has to be some huge, shocking, traumatic event, then I certainly didn't have that in my life. And certainly a lot of the people who came to me didn't either. But if we consider that really for a baby, it is life-threatening to not have good bonding, to not have a stable surrounding, to then possibly sometimes only find out. Because in my case, I can certainly say that I didn't even know about a lot of the things that then only I found out once I knew about this attachment trauma, that just the bonding not being stable or there being disruptions in the bonding, that can really be severely traumatic. That was really interesting for me to find out, and I learned a lot about that in my own experience as well as with the people I've been working with. Did that make sense?
Yes, Gopa, you want to answer to her, or?
I think it's complete like that.
Oh, complete, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking before I came actually into the trauma work that for a trauma there has to happen something very, very terrible from the outside view. But now I see that it is how it is a felt sense from the person itself. So it might look from outside not very terrible or traumatic, but the felt sense is that my life is in danger and I cannot act accordingly. So I would call this the trauma. And what is important to know is that the trauma actually is over, and to notice there are just the reactions still in the nerve system, and this has to be discovered fully, and then the release can happen. That's as far as I know it now, in this moment. So, from the outside, it looks very simple. You know, if the baby doesn't get food in the right time, but for the baby it feels very terrible and can be very traumatic.
And not enough human contact and...
Also. Yeah. Or is not seen or not recognized or not felt.
Or the human being. Yeah.
Yes.
There are transgressions or violence even. Yeah.
Yeah, there have been so many explanations already. So. Maybe to put it simple, for me, trauma means an experience of separation with physical consequences in the body, which are so severe that life is more or less becoming a hell, that there's so much suffering. And the suffering is different from suffering, for example, by a crisis. This is something different. The suffering from trauma means that it is not you that experience suffering, it is like more like you are the suffering. And this happens always on the physical level of survival. So it's, to make it more concrete or more graspable, if a body experiences a life threat, then it responds to that in a certain way, which is just biology. And this response is actually... And there are actually two possibilities, either the activation with fight and flight or the free state as you already described. And this, the base, what we have to know is that these are deeply physical changes in the body. This is not something, something small. The whole body is changed also the brain, how the brain functions, all the areas of the brains which are active and which are not active. So we actually have a different body in that state. And this physical state change has psychological impacts. And if you have experienced trauma, for example, you can have depression. But from your own experience, it seems to be like a psychological problem. But actually, the root cause is a physical dysregulation of the autonomous nervous system. But this is not seeable for a person. So we must be careful with that, just to really look what it is. And if it is a trauma, we have to address the body regulation, otherwise it is not possible to dissolve the suffering. And if this dysregulation is addressed, then all other parts of our perception will calm down and a normal life is possible. With trauma, a normal life is not possible. It is a constant struggle between life and death, and the person maybe doesn't realize that himself. And also from the outside, it is not necessarily apparent. So, but if someone is trained in trauma and trauma healing, he can see that. And the person needs the information, hey, the state you are in is just, it is biology and it is understood and it has a name and it can be dissolved.
You are speaking from your own experience, yes?
Yeah, my own experience is, I myself struggled with that for practically my whole life, and I experienced really bad relationships with my parents, and actually my whole life I tried to dissolve that, to heal that, and I tried that with spirituality, with silence, with satsang, with energy work, with normal psychotherapy, and it all didn't do it. Also, the normal psychotherapy didn't work, like psychoanalysis, behavioral therapy, talk therapy, and all that stuff is absolutely useless in the case of trauma. And also, strong energy fields from big masters, of course, gave me some relief, but it didn't solve the problem. And what made the change was that one day I met a trauma therapist, and she precisely told me what it is, how it is called, and what my situation is, and how it is dissolved. So I had a context for that. And before that, I didn't even know what the situation was I was in. So, and with that, I could dissolve that. And it took about a year. And it was not, I mean, it was pleasant. It was not a big thing in the end.
It was not dramatic.
No. Not at all. It was just the realization, today I can be in contact with other humans, and this does not mean necessarily that my life is in danger. And that was the implicit pattern of my life. And that was dissolved, and since that I have a great life.
Is it also your experience that it's mainly some change in the body because of the trauma?
I mean, for our view, the body is a quite important part of an experience pattern, which we could say our experience in our relative life as a person is always created from moment to moment, and of course, the body, bodily sensations and states are very important in this. You know, yes, but we also would say, out of the hypnotherapeutic view, that also some other patterns are active, something like emotional feelings, like the way our senses are working, the way which pictures we imagine consciously or unconsciously, the way we breathe. Okay, this is bodily. Okay, yeah, that's a lot of elements of this are bodily, but it's the altogether there are several elements of the pattern, and from the hypnotherapeutic view, it's you can actually change a kind of suffering pattern through changing one of these elements. So if you change the bodily experience, and I don't know exactly how it was for you, which kind of, maybe through movement, through other
postures
of the body, through another different pattern, breathing patterns, there comes a change into this kind of restricted, freezed pattern. So, but also sometimes, I don't have this kind of deep traumatic experience, so I can only talk about when I work with people, but we are not experts really through to traumatic experience, but we work with people who have parts of traumatic processing, I would say. And it sounds in your case that you speak about a really heavy traumatic, people who have really heavy traumatic experiences. But as I would say, you could also change some patterns over other elements, you know. Just not only the body. It's also possible maybe to have a different kind of imagination, to work with pictures of safety, of comfort, of feeling held or something. And this also can make dramatic changes in patterns. And also another thing, maybe when we come to the satsang and Advaita tradition, if we experience ourselves not as the suffering pattern, as all this, the tendency is enormed, and with such suffering patterns to say, okay, I am this suffering body, yeah? But there's also a possibility to find out who we truly are, and in a way, we can disidentify from our identification with the body, with the thoughts, with the feelings, and come back to something like pure consciousness, which is in a way the witness of all, of all these experiences. But it seems that in a traumatic experience, this is sometimes very hard to come to this kind of really this consciousness, no? And the traumatic patterns are maybe sometimes so strong that they pull you in again into this identification with the suffering. So, and maybe then sometimes it's not enough just to say, who are you really, and just experience what you are, and then let all the experience come up in this space. This sometimes doesn't work, because they are so these patterns of suffering or these experiences are so strong that they re-traumatize the special parts of us. So yeah, that's another perspective maybe.
I would like to add that usually when we say in the hypnotherapeutic work there are different elements to a pattern of suffering, that usually there is an attractor, which means that's the part that makes it the most real, or that also changes the most. And usually that is in the physical realm. Usually that is in the kinesthetic sense. Although usually they all somehow play together, and changing one element, one sense, can also change the others. But usually it is the kinesthetic that then when that's changed, it changes everything. But I do have to say also in my personal experience that it did not seem to do it, to change only the physical or well, whatever. And maybe it just, for me personally, didn't quite work. Because actually then I was very curious and I did even try this TRE, trauma release exercise, and for me somehow they didn't seem to work. But for me it seems to really take more of the imagery and the emotional, and it's in a way it seems like totally contradictory to the satsang tradition, where we say it's about stopping all the story. But sometimes there, it seems like we need to also, as we do hypnotherapeutically, then re-enter the story to then solve it from there. Because as Thorsten said, and I would agree that, yes, it is possible, if and when and in any given moment, it is possible to just drop into emptiness and vastness and realize nothing's been hurt here. And at the same time, that is the ultimate resource to then from there come back and have the capacity to meet traumatic experiences also. And again, it can be a trap. It can even become an avoidance to say, oh, okay, there's only emptiness. That's all that's true. And then we even avoid really coming back to living a full human life and integrate whatever wants to be integrated there.
So it seems for some people it may be the first step to get healed the trauma and then to be possibly be open for feeling themselves, for losing the ego idea, to get unidentified, to just to be flowing life, not a person anymore.
And it may be the other way around, and it may go back and forth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, for me it was the other way around, so to say. Mm-hmm. So maybe there was this pain or the suffering, and urgently there was needed release, yeah, or liberation or healing, however you want to call it. And somehow life brought me to satsang and to a really good teacher that pointed the attention directly to the source of everything, and this could be seen. And there could be seen that who I really am is free. Oh, what a release. And I knew exactly all the rest is not me or myself. And it became easier and easier to rest in that silence and in that peace. And also it was easy to point that out for people that came to me. But the deeper traumatic experience that was somehow stored in the nervous system was not healed. And this could be seen also through that view. And I was interested, because I was interested in peace and I was interested in healing and in meeting lovingly and nicely and beautiful. And I could see that there are some reactions happening in this organism which don't allow that. And so I was really interested, what is going on? And it didn't come to my mind that it was a trauma response. So, and my teacher then also started to notice that and was working with the work of somatic experiencing. He took sessions and he told me how great it is. But in that time I was like therapy resistant, so to say. But one day the pain was so strong, so I said, okay, let's go there, let's try it. And lucky enough, I found a very good therapist and could see, wow, this is happening here. And as Gopal already spoke before, it was explained to me what is happening here. And that helped a lot, and there I knew, okay, I have to go deeper into that. It doesn't mean that going deeper into that gives more peace or more completeness or whatever. It just helped to have a just nicer life. And that's what comes to my mind right now.
I would like to add something about the layers of the body and the psyche, because you said that TRE didn't do it for you. What I see is that there are two parts, the physical part of the body, the dysregulated nervous system, and the attachment part. In case of a shock trauma, physical bodywork like TRE and SE really hit the point and work. But if it is more going to attachment trauma, or if it is even not actually trauma, it is because trauma is the brainstem area of the brain, and this means life, death. Struggle, and so this is actually not the level of emotions from my point of view, because emotions is more in, located in the limbic system in the brain. So this is a higher level, and for example, I mean, you can see it if you are in a life danger, there are no emotions. There's a physical state of activation, but there are no emotions. In the middle of the life threat. And if the body gets back into security, then the space for emotions is there again, because emotions has something to do with social interaction, and this is the level of the limbic system, and it's just from the evolution the second big stage. So I think we should really precisely look what level is affected. If it is trauma, if it is a relational problem, if it is emotional blockage, if it is distorted relational patterns, which is even higher, which is more in the cortex and the mental area. And trauma is the physical body. It is the body that is stuck in a life threat. So what I see is that the easiest access to heal that is with the body. with body work. And what I also would like to add is that, for example, I've been with John of God, if somebody knows this guy. And this is, what he did is also something different, which doesn't match in any of my, of the stuff that I've learned, because this guy in Brazil just dissolved layers of trauma, of deep layers of trauma in my system, which I couldn't even access with trauma therapy. So it just was dissolved. No process, nothing. Just gone. So I don't understand that, but it happened.
Can I ask something too? Because I'd be really curious if you're willing and can explain so quickly and easily, because you said earlier that a trained trauma therapist can see that if somebody has this physical, how can you explain how you can see that?
Yes, of course. It is, what happens is that as, actually, I mean, if you know the polyvagal theory from Dr. Stephen Porges, this is the core model to understand all that. And the autonomous nervous system actually has only three states. The state of security and relaxation, the state of activation, the fight and flight, and the shutdown. So these are physical states. And actually these states affect the viscera. So what happens in the heart, in the body, in this area. And what we see in the face, for example, is the reflection of the state of the lower parts of the body. So you can see in the face if there's activation or shutdown or security. Mm-hmm. And you can also see it in the body posture, if the person moves, where's the energy, and also in the sound of the voice, because if the organism feels safe, the sound is more like is changing. And also the part of the face in the upper part, if social interaction is possible, then this part shows changes. And this also, all that has to do with the part of the nervous system which is necessary for social interaction. And Stephen Porges calls it the SES, the social engagement system. And this is only activated, this is only active if the physical body feels safe. If the body doesn't feel safe, the social interaction in the engaging system is shut down, because it doesn't make sense in a dangerous situation. Then we don't have the capabilities to interact, and we can see in another phase that, because that means danger for us. If somebody has shut down the social engagement system, it means danger for us, because the person is in a defense mechanism. So we have to see that, because it means a threat for us. And if the person is back in the safe state and the SES is online, then we also see that. And this is necessary, because our species lives, can only live in cooperation. And cooperation means coming close together without threat.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, I have two more questions, if I may. So one is, if I heard that right, that everybody can see that, just maybe if we're not trained to recognize it, we don't label it as the SES is shut down or they're traumatized, but we can sense it. We know, oops, something's dangerous here, they're not really connecting. Maybe I would call it in my words, is that?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And then also I heard you say that this can go on and off. So that means that even in somebody severely traumatized, there may be moments where they are interacting and this seems all normal, and then there are moments where it goes back into freeze mode or...
Yeah, it's basically, it's possible. I mean, there are people who are traumatized, but it is not like a total shutdown which is active 24 hours a day. So,
okay.
And for example, in a shock trauma, maybe the person gets back to life, but if the trigger comes, the system shuts down again. And then,
okay,
and what is interesting, you even see that in the brain scanner. So I've seen pictures, images of brain imagery, and you can see all that. You can see the state of the brain in every three states. And this is absolutely fantastic, interesting, because then you understand, for example, why a person, if he is in a life threat or is traumatized, for example, loses the ability to build words, to express things, because the Broca area in front of the brain is just offline.
Mm.
Or the part who creates the time perception is offline, so...
That's why things get fragmented and memory can't be built in those moments, huh? Or...
Yeah, the fragmentation is because in a life threat, if you're not in a shutdown state, because shutdown means that the thalamus closes the door completely and the brain altogether, the cortex, is lowered down. So though there nothing enters the cortex, so it's the most extreme case is amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're talking about is the flood state. If the body is in the activation state for fight and flight, it biologically needs every single information, because it could be the information that saves the life. So what the body does, the thalamus doesn't build a coherent story of all the imprints of the different senses. It just opens the door and lets the stuff get through into the cortex with a higher density, with so much more information. But the price is, it is not coherent anymore. It's not a complete story. And then we have person who, there are fragments of emotions, of sensations and so on, but it makes biologically sense. And you can see that all that in the brain imagery.
So that would be part of the flooding that happens? Overwhelm of the information being let in at once, and then it doesn't make sense anymore. It can't be
put into
a coherent memory or story.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It is fragmented. It cannot be expressed. It cannot be communicated. It's like... like that, no.
So then, in a way, it's like we could all kind of trust that we'd have a natural sense if that's going on with somebody, right? That we have a kind of biological detector for that, because it is dangerous for us, as you said, if somebody's shut down like that. So we would sense it, we would notice. If we have a client who's going into a traumatic state like that, we would know.
Yeah, you feel it. Maybe you cannot call it the precise name, but you feel it that. So, but if you do trauma work, you have to precisely see what's going on. And if you don't, you can ask. I mean, that's what I do. I just ask if I'm not sure.
What do you ask then? How or what do you ask?
For example, do you see me? Do you see that I'm there?
And what would people answer typically?
If they are in a shutdown state, they tell things like, yes, I see the input through the eyes, but there's no feeling that there's somebody. Is one possibility with attachment trauma, and another possibility is to just ask some facts, to see if the brain is fully online, or just to ask what do you feel, and maybe the person says I don't understand your question, but I don't understand, what do you mean? And then I mean you can ask. For example, if you move the body, does this change anything? So if you are in a free state, of course the body also freezes, and if you make the person move, and then the free state is usually dissolved very fast, and then emotions can come. Like that.
Interesting, that's really relatively new for me, or like just all of this was really new for me so far. I've been more focused, I've learned more about the the aspects of dissociation and association, and they've been really important in the hypnotherapeutic understanding of trauma work that we've been doing. It's really essential to have a safe space and to then see from there, of course, first of all, and then to see, like, when people are dissociated from being here and from their resources and associated into traumatic experience, to then bring them back. And like, that would be those moments when we would ask questions like, can you see me? Can you open your eyes and look at me and come back to this place? Or maybe even notice your body to be sure they're associated here and dissociated from the traumatic memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this, yeah, that's interesting. That's new for me.
I mean, it seems to work for you. But
yeah, totally.
For your
and to be
also.
Honest, I like, it's been really interesting for me to hear this from you, and I'm quite happy to hear that it sounds like I could trust that I would notice, and then maybe I haven't actually seen this happen so far, because what you're describing, I don't think that's really occurred in our classes, or...
Oh, well, it reminds me of some single sessions, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe I just kind of like spontaneously or immediately then get back into interaction, or I don't know. Yeah, we've had those.
You just can, without knowing the theoretical background, makes totally sense,
mm-hmm.
So, just, there was a remembrance of one single meeting where this kind of looking through happened, where the person said, I see you, I can see you, but I cannot feel you. There was some states of this, and something like then inviting people to change the pattern of their, maybe just to change the pattern of their movement and go out of this, mm-hmm. You often make this,
yeah,
huh?
Of course.
Go out of the position where you are in and move and mm-hmm. move to another place and so on. I mean, I think there is, I find it very interesting what you say, and I read a little bit about it, and I think it's really, really good to know these models and behind.
Yeah.
And I also can imagine, or I would say for us, even not knowing exactly the mechanisms of often a good therapeutic can do this intuition out of intuition. Yeah. But also, it's very good to hear about this traumatic ways, and maybe to use this knowledge and bring it into experience and yeah.
Yeah, I found it also very helpful to just know about some tools. Because if you don't know them, then you just can do it intuitively, and sometimes it's
we use a lot of tools,
yes.
and they are not very different, but not always with the knowing background of the exact states. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the end, it are not actually the tools, but it's good to know them, and also I think it's very, very important somehow to let the person know that it is safe.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's,
yeah,
and this is
one of the main,
yeah.
Yeah,
main factors of
the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is,
yeah,
this is what they found out also in the humanistic psychology, that the main factor is the way the therapeutic person is present. Yeah.
The relationship.
Yeah.
So the therapeutic relationship is what has the most.
And probably it's also in your case that you did your own traumatic healing of yourself, that you can provide this space of just being there and being open, and then also give invitations to this
what God is, what you learned.
Maybe we should disguise that. For example, now I feel activation. I don't like that. So my system is going on now and wants to hit this guy. Just to make it more real. And I see that somebody is taking care of that, so I can relax again. It's unbelievable. I mean, why do they have to do such a noise there? And they see that we are working here. It's crazy.
They are youngsters.
What?
They are youngsters.
I don't care about that. I am fucking angry now.
How is it?
It's great. It's great because I know I don't have to act it out.
Hey, that's a level of freedom. And alive at the same time.
How alive, huh? To notice it. It's alive, huh? To notice that.
Yeah, it's different than surrender to the situation, for example. It's different to shut down.
Yeah.
It's more moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's going so fast. I mean, what did help you to look in the eyes of, for example, Gaia right now? Did this help you?
Well, basically, I mean, I have integrated that, so it's not actually a problem. I just enjoyed that. And what helps is to express it. And to know that I'm okay with my rage and my hate, so it is fully allowed, and this is because then it has a channel, so it's expressed, and then it's not stuck in the system. And yes, it helps the that it's accepted, and not somebody's not saying, "Hey, crazy, shut up." That's it. But it's really, it's fast, yeah. It's like from 1 second to the other.
Fast there and fast gone.
Yeah. And maybe we could, at this point, it's interesting maybe to explain a mechanism called bottom-up hijacking.
Say that again? Bottom-up?
Bottom-up hijacking.
Hijacking.
So this is interesting because in a way that had happened now, because I wanted to be here as much professional as possible, silent and how do you say souverän?
Oh,
I don't know, perfect.
Self-esteem.
What
was that?
However,
serious.
So this is the idea from the cortex, from the media prefrontal cortex. What I want to do, how I want to be. So, a situation came and something in myself was activated, which I'm actually not, I didn't like, I didn't want that. So what happened? How is that possible? There's happened something which took control, which was different. And this is called bottom-up hijacking. So the idea we have, the conscious focus we have, can easily overwritten, very easily by all kinds of stuff, especially, for example, if it has to do with survival, of course, if it has to do with food, with a partner, then the limbic system says, this is so important, I don't care about your ideas, how do you call it, fortplanting?
Reproduction?
Reproduction is much more important. So we just we just put your cortex offline and give you some other imprints, and then you are interested in that other person. And this happens on three levels. It's not only the limbic system who can override the cortex, it's also the brainstem. For example, reflexes. If you think about something, have plans, and then a car comes and you are shocked and jump away, then all the higher layers of the brain are just put off, and the brainstem does the reaction, and then the stuff is put online again, and then we say, I have jumped away, but that's not true. It was the brainstem who made that. Like that. And this is important, because this is happens by traumatized people in a way that is not appropriate anymore. I mean, if a car comes and I have to jump away, that makes sense. And if there's a great person, it makes sense to be attracted and go there. But if it happens, if, for example, enter an elevator, that makes no sense, because an elevator is no life threat. Or if we meet a person with some special clothes, and this remembers us, triggers experiences from early childhood, and our system goes into free state, for example, that makes no sense. So this is what, this is the suffering from trauma. The body reacts to normal situations as if they contain life threat. And what we have to do is to enter this bottom-up hijacking, to cut that it doesn't happen.
And again, you can do that through body exercises.
You can do it through many ways. The first step is to understand and know that what happens in the body has nothing to do with the reality. Mm-hmm. So this is something you have to know and really understand. And then you create more and more distance to the body reaction and what you see with your senses. And in the middle of the experience, if you start to check if there's really a life threat, then something new can enter the system. Because the tendency is to close up and cut yourself off from the experience. But if you start looking out again, then something new hits the old patterns which are active. And this slowly makes it weaker and not so powerful. So this is one possible approach. There are many others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually often when there are coming the spiritual concepts that we then learn in satsangs, for example, then we learn who I really am doesn't do anything, doesn't react at all.
It's always holy.
Yes, just sees in silence. And sometimes when this is happening, and because shutting down also gives a kind of peace, or a kind of silence, we don't have to experience that. But it's actually a dissociated state, which is painful. It's just painful.
So in this regard, I'm very thankful to my teacher, Gangaji, who really, really opened up of course, the one side to really allow yourself to be still and to experience the stillness. But on the other side, really emphasize the direct experience of everything that comes up, especially emotions, painful or so-called uncomfortable emotions like fear, like anger, like despair, like sadness, really to experience it directly, which means not to suppress it, but also means not to to go into any kind of story about it, but just really being totally present within your body and your energetic system, and let this whole wave of energy pull through you, push or explode or whatever. So in this way I would say it's not a satsang of dissociation, it's both. It's really so, and I don't know about my what kind of, I would say, still say that I had a quite, I mean, there are traumatic parts of my psyche I can also see, my life was in what was not really with heavy traumas. I think maybe something comes up. Who knows? But all the emotional sufferings that I had and recognized in my path, and which came also after the realization of truth, that was the most freeing part, to direct experience whatever comes up. So, and it sometimes really shook my body and was really kind of transformation and not easy processes, but for me, a lot of things just dissolved like this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just want to say. And I think there is a potential in this. If you're really straight true to the truth that you are, that is not moving, and let everything appear in this, that is a big resource, I would say. But I don't want to say that it's the only thing. Sometimes you have to do some other kinds of help. So, but I just want to emphasize also this power of being present.
Yes, absolutely.
And but I also can see what you mean. When we sat in silence, there came a picture also to my mind. I like this metaphor of the ocean. You know, the waves up where we can identify with one wave and say, oh, I'm separate from all other waves, and the depth of the ocean, which is where you know that you are all the experience, all the waves and this which doesn't move. And there came this picture of a freeze wave. Yeah. Just one wave comes to a small wave, and then the small wave freezes. You know, so. And this kind of freezing is also something which is not moving. Just like the depth of the ocean, which is not moving, it's still, but it's not
the same.
True, it's not the same. It's really, the life is cut off in a way. So, and then, if you can free this ice above, then it's really whole, and the life energy can really play its, it's life. But sometimes, I don't know, maybe you can tell me if you find examples, but I think there's also sometimes really, maybe there is a traumatic processing and there is a freezing of a wave, and something happens again, a traumatic experience comes, and it's so heavy that it really breaks the ice. You know? Sometimes we also have this in the most severe circumstances, or especially because you cannot control it, but there is a surrender, then there's something that happens and it goes down, and you experience there's an experience of freedom without any kind of traumatic work on ourselves. I think this is also an option. Maybe it's we shouldn't. I think that also sometimes it happens. So, in this way, yes, it's not always, surrendering is not,
I know what you're talking about, I know that also. The deep shock, and which suddenly stops the whole mind, but also on a really deep level, so complete experience.
No. That's even one of the few things that I learned in my early studies, during just my studies of psychology, about trauma, that even that classical trauma psychologist, she taught us that it's not only the experience, but it's also the processing of whether we then dissociate or process the experience in a traumatic way or not. Because I remember actually the lecture we studied with then for our thesis, that she had done some questionnaire studies together with this trauma psychologist, and they found that, for example, there was one woman who had had several really severe traumatic experiences, being raped multiple times, whatever, and she showed no symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, just nothing. And so she became curious and said, well, what's going on? Why is this woman not traumatized with these heavily, should be traumatic experiences?
It's never the experience.
Right,
it's
exactly. Never the that's experience. What it is, what's happening
it's
with
the
it.
It's the physical
then.
Change of the autonomous nervous system.
But then the question is, what I'm interested in also is, like, how come sometimes this physical change happens and sometimes it doesn't?
Yeah, it's
so this woman, obviously, she framed it in a different way.
In what age happened that? When she was how old when that happened?
Oh, I don't know that.
Because
what I do know is that when they kind of left the setting of the questionnaire and really just asked her, the answer that came back was that she had an explanation for it, which didn't make it about her. That she said, well, but it was the war. So that was during the war that this had happened. And so she then processed it in a different way. Okay, you have a different take on it.
I don't know, but what I see is that, for example, it depends if something traumatic happens, it depends in what kind of nervous system it hits.
Yeah,
and for example, if a human being grows in a mother which is really regulated and experienced, for example, the first 3 years in a very ideal way and the nervous system really gets stable, yeah, and then maybe at the age of 6 something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Then it hits a nervous system which already has a strong, really strong basis, and then maybe the circumstances are helpful, so what not, and this then the body doesn't need to, the body can handle that differently. Then, for example, if a person grows up with less attachment, if the system doesn't really can build the basis, the solid basis of stability. If the person from the early childhood, from the birth, is dysregulated and it never really, you know, gets the attachment, and if then something happens like that, then really it has a complete different impact. So I think it depends on what it hits, which kind of nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Which actually reminds me a little bit, we cannot go into it, but we just thought about, because we are also using the anagram as a way of shadow work or healing work, and sometimes we think it's also that gets also a taste and sometimes it's not. It's also a question: what anagram type does a nervous system has, and how it works with trauma, you know. So maybe some nervous systems are more, which have this system, which are more, you know, sensitive to get into this kind of traumatic processing.
Yeah.
But that's another theme.
But it's great, Enneagram is great, I like that.
Yes. And especially, you know, it's just hypothesis, so, but we thought about maybe just really the five fixation, which also tends from its own go back into a kind of emotional and not even not emotional states and draw back into a kind of silence and being unmoved, being only the observer, and so that's maybe this is also kind of sensitive for this kind of collective working of the brain more than others sometimes. I don't know. That's just a little bit going into the direction. Now, what do you mean? Maybe I just want to. Do you know about the work of Louise Redemann? I mean, what do you think of this? Because what we see in our work is that actually using such interventions like creating a safe place in your imagination, and not only just imagine it, but also feel the body in a safe place, feel like you breathe in a safe place, feel like which emotions of safety and being whole can be there. Maybe sometimes also you can take imaginary parents at your side, you can take imaginary masters at your side, which all support the feeling of safety, basically. So that can be very powerful, and that when you meet from the traumatic experience from this kind of anchor, when you anchor yourself in this, then you can, for example, watch the traumatic experience as a movie or something like this, and then it's really, really working very well in a lot of cases that traumatic impact gets weakened or dissolved.
You have experience with this?
I'm not working like that. I'm not agreeing with that because it's not real. And it's, from my point of view, it is not necessary because this is, if we work with image, with something which, what we imagine, it is not real. It is imagination. And this is not strong, usually not strong enough, and it is not necessary. The real actual resource is the connection with another human being. And if I work with people, I only focus on that. How to get in contact with that person. And this is the resource. We don't need
this. This resource is also there, of course.
Yeah, it is helpful, but I mean, I don't work like that. I just, because my basis is the polyvagal theory for Dr. Stephen Borges. So this is my basis. And this is just state regulation and getting in contact. And I see that this hits the core and it is enough. So maybe this also works, but I don't use that approach.
Gaia, for you also, you would also say to go in contact is the greatest resource.
If it can happen, if the contact can happen in a way that it is not dangerous, it's a wonderful and a very good resource. And because that's what we want, eh? That's what we need as human beings. Eh? It's very charged, what's that?
Okay.
You need the group, yeah? You need the family, you need the connection, in a way that it is not hurting and not dangerous. Because there can also be contact that is very dangerous. So, and I worked with people, for them it was not even possible to sit 3 meters away from me. It was too close. Eh? They needed even to sit in another room. in the beginning, that they just slowly could start to notice what they need to come more into the contact. And if that is goes too quickly, it can be not such a good idea. So that's what I have experienced also. And I also have experienced working with a kind of a fantasy. So giving the person, for example, the idea, just imagine for a short moment you would have superpowers. What would you do? Because sometimes people are so shut down and they cannot do that movement early. Yeah. But when they have this image, yeah, if I would be Superman or whoever, suddenly I could do this movement, yeah, or, and that can help a lot, yeah, to come to aliveness again. Not always, no? Of course. Everything, yeah, it's, as Gopal said already, everybody has a different setup in the nerve system or in the physiology.
And you find out by asking the people, the one, how he or she feels, to find out the place when she or he feels safe, or you see it with your eyes or with your intuition.
I ask the person, what do you notice? How is it when you see that? Or how is it when you, whatever it is? And sometimes I'm asking also, are you safe? Sometimes people say, I don't feel safe. And I say, I can see that. But how is it when you look around? Are you safe here? And it really depends. You cannot make it in a strict way or something like that. So sometimes that works. Sometimes the questions, are you safe, is already too much for people. You cannot ask them this question. And then there it's important to find some resource for the person that the nervous system can relax a little bit, yeah? And find something that the person likes in this moment, yeah? And maybe later ask the question.
What came to my mind in the beginning also, I just say it, I think that the level where we experience ourselves as whole, as consciousness, which is whole, which was never hurt in a way. This is also very, very important. And I think also that people who has traumatic, severe traumatic problems, they smell it. They smell this kind of, they come to the satsang because they see, oh, there is something else, there's something whole. Maybe my life is really a mess and I cannot, it's really, yeah. And then they smell that this is there. So
it's attractive.
Yeah, and that's good, and it's good if they have glimpses into this true nature. And then also the other part is to really support them with any kind of work which works for us.
And for some that may be physical, just on the nervous system level, but really our experience is that this imagination work works very well for a lot of people. You know, even if, yes, it is only imagination.
No, it's not only imagination.
Something I wanted to say, and maybe I didn't quite bring that across in the first place, that I really wanted to say that it is important to bring it into the physical experience also.
Yes.
That even if it is only imagination, it becomes a physical experience if you do it correctly or well. That hypnotherapeutically, it's really important that, yes, it is experienced physically. with the physical felt sense. And then it does have effects because it changes your experience of reality. And in that sense, in the end, it does change reality. It does become real because you can enter reality in a different way. Whatever level of reality we're speaking, of course, speaking satsang reality, we're speaking of, wow, none of what appears is real anyway. And then from there again, that's really a huge resource, because seeing that you can actually allow yourself to drop out of all those realities that appear and disappear, that is the ultimate resource that has the freedom to then meet all those other realities. And I would say that part of that traumatic processing that we spoke about earlier, that I heard you agree that it is never the experience itself, but yes, it is also what it hits, what it meets, but also the way it is processed. That I would say that part of that is that there is not the possibility to really just let it pass through, to experience it and experience it in a way that the organism can stay alive and present with it. But it shuts down. So I would say that yes, one thing that having this experience of, wow, there is something that's whole and untouched and unaffected, and actually I am that, and I can rest as that no matter what appears and disappears, is in that sense the ultimate resource, because it gives me the capacity to meet that and experience that, as overwhelming as it may be. And that can even, in retrospect, or even after the fact, help process what I wasn't able to process before. And also on the level of relative experience, I would say that that is where imagery and imagination in our experience and for the people we work with do seem to work. Because in this moment when we are working already, also the traumatic experience or the traumatic reaction that is still there as a result is imagination in a way, even if it happens in the nervous system on a physical level. But when we enter an imagination where the nervous system can relax, that is reality too. And so, in a way, my teacher Eli, who we learned most of the hypnotherapy from, he often says that we use hypnosis or trance in a homeopathic way, meaning that we, of course, we don't want to stay caught in imagination later. If that, I don't know if that was part of your saying that it's only imagination. And of course, we don't want to get stuck in imagination. But it's, as long as there is an imagination of suffering, we then want to use imagination that helps healing that, that helps to come out of the trance of suffering, so to say.
Yeah, what I hear is that, I mean, I also have this experience of vastness of consciousness, I think. I mean, I know that, and what I hear is that you're more or less centered in there for you, or from your perspective, this is the main resource. I mean, it is. And maybe it's interesting. I mean, the point, what I think about is, I mean, how is the chance to bring, to have a person who's traumatized, to make him help them to have this experience? This, for me, things is, if it happens, it's great. If you know ways to make that happen, it's great. But I don't know how difficult it is. But what is always available is the contact to another person. It does not say that this is better or other, but I just have to see what is available, what we can do, and what is possible. So maybe both. Yeah. So if a person is not able to have that experience of consciousness, of vastness, there is no other way to help them on the level of interaction, of relationships.
of bonding, of attachment.
I totally agree.
I mean, I don't know how what you think is the possibility to have traumatized people to access this level without being healed. So just as a resource. I mean, I don't know. You have this experience. I didn't.
I totally agree that sometimes it may take more cautious steps or smaller steps, so to say, like especially if somebody's traumatized severely and stuck in this, I would call it a defensive mode in a way, or protective mode, you know, of course, I would totally not opt for pushing them in any way, you know, because I think Thorsten said that earlier also, that might just result in re-traumatization. You know, to then just say, oh, okay, just let it all go and just drop into emptiness, maybe just too overwhelming again, because to my understanding, that's possible.
I mean, is there a precise way to bring a person to that experience?
Well, you can't bring anybody to that experience, I wouldn't say. You can certainly invite it, you can encourage it, and you can support it in different ways, you know? And I believe I've heard you say also that you've had the experience that it just can happen, you know, that it can even be just a kind of a transmission, or maybe we could say we can catch it from one another in a way also even, you know, or we can give pointers that can help people even look in this direction or focus their attention in this direction and find this for themselves. But of course, if somebody is caught in a very defensive mode and a very protective nervous system, I totally agree that it may take more careful or slower steps before, so they can even relax into feeling safe first and then maybe opening up to letting that experience happen.
The question is, where do we guide people? Where do I guide someone who's suffering? I mean, the person who suffers from trauma doesn't look for enlightenment. He or she wants to get rid of that suffering. So, and the question is, what do we do with such a person? So, I mean, we can say, okay, there's something which is not affected. Yeah, try to.
Yeah.
So, or we just help to get in contact with people, and the suffering is reduced. Yeah, or both together. I don't know, but. I see that as two possibilities.
Not so sure if that is so. If there might not be also people who are severely traumatized, but they're not looking for trauma therapy, but they want to be pure consciousness, or they want enlightenment, and it may be that they want enlightenment for all the wrong reasons, believing that that will get them rid of their traumatic experience,
and that
will stop the suffering.
Yeah, they don't. They want to release the suffering, not the alignment. They think that alignment is the way to get rid of that.
But still, if they come with that, you know, if they come and they say, "Oh, I don't want trauma therapy. I don't want you to do any of your hypnotherapeutic or TRE or whatever work on me. I just want enlightenment." Mm. Then,
I mean.
You know, then of course, you know, we offer them what we can offer. And still I'm not for pushing at all. I'm just for inviting and offering. And hey, sometimes, you know, sometimes it may very well happen. And I do believe that it has happened for people who are severely traumatized, that they do get glimpses. I thought I heard you say that before, that you said you had deep experiences of being just pure consciousness and being lost in bliss, kind of. Wasn't your words now, but like something to that effect. But then you found later that, of course, that didn't solve your real problems in your life, because that needed trauma therapeutic work. And I have actually done a study or research for my thesis, for my diploma on satsang and psychotherapy, because even when I studied psychology, that was like part of the discussion. You know, does anybody need psychotherapy or psychology if you can't have satsang? And I actually found people doing that research and doing interviews and studying a lot of other interviews, of course, also. I found several people who said that it was actually deep experiences of consciousness, deep experiences of awakening, that only opened them up to then doing trauma therapeutic work. or even psychotherapeutic work, that before they would deny that, they would refuse that, and they didn't feel ready for it. But for them, it seemed to be the other way around, rather. Meaning.
And maybe just one thought. Maybe we also have maybe different kind of clients. Maybe to us, some people come who really are interested in awakening, enlightenment, and they have traumatic problems sometimes. And maybe your clients are more focusing on hearing your traumatic work, and they come, and maybe they are they want this from you, and that's certainly also a huge difference, you know, because you don't need to guide them to this kind of awakening. Also, you do the traumatic work, which is great, you know, and sometimes we would send someone to you where we cannot deal with. So yeah, it's maybe we have different people who come to us also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's great to work in a network, yeah, somehow. I would love that, yeah. If this could happen, yeah, if people get different approaches, different methods that could help them to enjoy actually and to be happy,
and everyone
not be unhappy at least.
In a way, everyone is also a specialist in his way, and it's good. And I think we also tend a little bit. I can say this for me: my work is the best work. And this is how I do it.
Because of course that's what we experience, what works, right? Or else we wouldn't do it if we weren't experiencing that it works.
There's one thing I would like to hear from you, Gopa. You are offering kind of groups for people to where they can help themselves, because you have seen that there are not enough trauma therapist.
Yeah.
Maybe can you talk about that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about the whole planet, our situation, and when I see the state in which people are, and the number of therapists we have, this model doesn't work. I mean, we cannot get a therapist for every person who's suffering. You cannot have a spiritual teacher for everyone. So this model simply doesn't work for the planet as a whole. So I was thinking, if you come like an alien on this planet, so what would you do? I mean, I'm a computer scientist, so there's a problem, and how can it be solved? And I was thinking and praying for weeks and weeks about that. And then suddenly something appeared in my mind, and it was obvious that actually we have all that we need, because we came from the evolution, we came to this state. So there must be something for us, for each of us, where we can help ourselves. Because 1,000 years ago there was no therapist, no trauma therapist, no such people. And if you study the biology, how that works, the regulation of the nervous system, it is obvious that we need a group, and this group needs to get in contact, and this is what happens for all mammals. All mammals do that. They regulate themselves in a group, together. So if there's some problem or some struggle, the group organizes and helps itself. And we all have that capacity from our biology. But the society is so distorted that this stuff cannot work anymore. We are so isolated that we have problems to come together, and
let the biology work. And I just created a simple group process where every member has 10 minutes space and can talk about the state of the body, of the emotions and the thoughts. And the rest of the group listens attentively, consciously, without any dialogue, without any comment. And then the next person. And if we do that, all that is in the nervous system is not resolved, gets hurt, becomes visible and is healed, because all that, what we carry within us, which is not dissolved, is something which we didn't, which was not able to communicate to our parents. And if we start communicating that, the systems release, as the systems come down, and there's more relaxation. And with that process, we have something like a group regulation without therapist, without spiritual master. And the idea is that people, where they are, how they are, come together and do this process, and the structure of this process replaces the leader in a way. And this can happen everywhere, and it is not organized in a central way, so it cannot be destroyed. I was looking for a solution which cannot be destroyed. Because if it is organized by an organization, by a great master, if you kill the master, the whole structure is destroyed. And I didn't want that. And this is part of also this is how modern IT systems work. They work decentralized. So.
And the groups meet in the internet, is it?
No. The real locally. That's the project is called Local Groups.
Okay.
So physically local. Yes, something very simple. And many people, the traumatized people, what they are lonely. They need contact. And in such a group is a place where they can land. I mean, it's not the complete healing, but it's a group where they can go once a week or once a month, and that can change a whole life. That can be the beginning for healing. So, and I wanted also a structure that replicates itself automatically. So if the group happens and the people get more and more regulated, then each one can offer his own group. So it spreads automatically, and it is decentralized. So that's the idea.
So you want to make yourself without work and your colleagues?
That was the beginning, because I was flooded with so many requests that I really thought about that. That was the start. That.
And have you heard back from groups? Several of them happening?
Yeah, I created a Google map on my homepage, and every group, everyone offers a group gets a heart. So you have a map of Germany, of Switzerland, and you see, I think, 30 hearts.
30,
and the people do that, and the results are amazing. I mean, that's unbelievable. Huh. Really.
And how they are called? The groups? Local, just local groups?
Just local groups, yeah. And I also have a description of the process also in English and German. And it's not, I mean really, it's not, I didn't invent that. It appeared in my mind, it was given to me, so I just passed on.
There's something I would like to add or ask in a way, because I followed this, let's call it a discussion in a way, about the hypnotherapy, and what I heard or learned is that there are two aspects concerning trauma healing. One aspect is the physical aspect, which is the nervous system, which addresses the nervous system to calm it down and to give it a feeling of safety. And the other part is the part of connection with people, of getting in contact and feeling safe in contact with people. And these two parts seem to be really important for complete trauma healing, or however you may call it. So one approach to bring the nervous system into safety again is the TRE, as I learned it. And another approach might be, I don't know, as I say, it might be because I didn't experience it yet, the hypnotherapeutic approach, because as we know, imagination or things that we experience in imagination also create physical results. The body reacts to imagination in the same way or almost the same way as it reacts to things that we experience in real life. So if I understood it right, then TRE and the hypnotherapeutic approach may have the same results to the nervous system, to give it this safety. And then we need, in addition to that, the approach of being in contact with other people and feeling this safe. Contact, feeling safe in the contact. So may I ask whether you would agree or whether I got that wrong?
Quite good summary, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looks like that.
Okay. And it may well be that for different people, different approaches may work better, or they may feel attracted to one or the other, or however that shows up. So I think it's wonderful that there are different ways that we can offer.
And I would say, just for our work where we use hypnotherapy, it's just a part of this. It's trauma work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also the most important thing of our training, if you want to call it, is to be there for the other people as a true friend, we call it. True friend or silent
guide. Companion or guide.
Just that you are there and are in a way grounded in stillness, and just be there and accept everything which comes, and be in a heartful contact. That's the basic things. And then we can use some techniques of imagination and so, but the most important thing is also in a way it's a contact thing. It's just being there with an open heart and a still mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah.
Thank you.
It's so beautiful that there's so many different approaches to healing, and everyone can see where it helps. Sometimes this helps, and then sometimes something other helps.
Yeah, you also feel as a friend for the people who are coming to you?
Many people say that to me, yes. It feels like I'm being their best friend. And for me it feels also like this, working with the people, so it's like they are myself, somehow. Or not even somehow, they are. So, all the experiences happening in myself, this experience is myself. And I love if people feel well, because that resonates in me, so it might be even egoistic. and I like to be friendly also. That's somehow something from my personality.
Some people like to traumatize again.
Yeah, that's what people tell me very often. It feels they really can trust and can can take me as a friend and as a companion. Not as a teacher or not as a master or not as a preacher or not as a therapist. And I don't want to put that down, therapist or master or preacher, just to meet in that level. And what I want to add also, what I learned, for example, in the Nam approach, which is set on the SE or somatic experiencing approach, is this aspect of from bottom up and top down. That is so important, because if we only work with the body, and this is not approached, something is missing. And if we only work in the psychic or in the mental, emotional level, the body is not met. So this, I found this approach very important, and when I could see that, how it works and how effective this work is, so wow, yeah, it's great. And it's not a very, for, how is it for you? For me as a therapist, so to say, it's not even, there's no effort. It's, it's so much joy actually to be interested, to find out together what helps to not be unhappy.
Okay. Maybe I can add that, it's, for me, it's, what I try to do is to access the rage in the person. So the first thing that happens is, that I do everything that this person hates me. And then, if this is processed, then the true connection can happen. So I'm first interested in hate, rage, and anger only.
Can I ask something about that?
Yeah.
Because to me that sounds very interesting now. It sounds like complete opposite to creating a safe space.
Because
I thought, or was that, did I hear you say that it's about creating safety?
But it's not a contradiction. Mm-hmm. Because the hate appears as soon as the setting is safe for the person. Then, because the only problem we have from the trauma perspective is suppressed hate and rage. This is the first level of distortion of the life force. So this is at the basis of all problems. So if I access directly this part and tell them that it is safe now here to come up and express it and direct it to me, then...
Okay.
Like
so, before I understood you to say that you were doing something to make them hate you or to make them
feel
anger.
I do it that it comes up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they feel safe with you at the same time.
And this is something like it goes parallel at the same time. I access the rage and at the same time I emphasize that it is safe to come up.
Okay.
So there's the space and because the person itself doesn't want it and fears it. So it's both in parallel.
Hmm.
And sometimes it really takes time, huh? People start to get angry. Because it's so pushed down. For me, for example, it was when the anger or the rage was coming up immediately, the sadness was coming on top. So I had only the access to the sadness. Not to rage. Now, rage didn't fit into my image. Huh? It was not allowed. Huh? You know maybe a little bit about my story, but I even had a cancer in the 80s, yeah, where, because this anger was somehow internally labeled as bad or evil, so, and it didn't fit in my image. I was nice. I wanted to be the nice guy, the friendly guy. So somehow this, so I never let it out. I never had touched it somehow. Yeah? So it had to come out through the cancer somehow, yeah? To make me awake, to look. And even later, when the therapist asked me about anger, not for me, it's not happening in me, I don't have this bullshit. And that came more in my words, but not in the felt.
A good approach would be that before any communication, you should put on the gloves and really beat on each other, really, for maybe half an hour, and then we could start talking. We could change things.
Oh, we missed this part.
I don't know if I would do it this time.
That's a protection here. Yeah, interesting. I can relate to this from another perspective again. From the Enneagram, it's where we can approach this anger also. But it's really, for some people, or maybe traumatic again, and not sometimes Enneagram types also, it's a revelation to add a freeing force of feeling anger and rage, and it's really freeing up our personality.
But then again, there are Enneatypes for whom it's not a problem to get angry at all.
Oh, there are some
so
types
who
just
in general,
put it out.
They can
exactly
be traumatized. It's like, that doesn't make sense to me.
But I don't know if we go another round now, or if it's just...
Yeah, we could start over.
Yes.
But
actually,
we have to pack.
Then we can meet again and do it the first...
Yeah. That means you would be happy if we finish.
Oh well.
Yes. Okay then. Thanks a lot for the talk.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And asking questions.
Fun. Katma was a good help. Asking questions.
Oh, okay. Glad it helped, at least.